Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all for standing by. At this time, I would like to inform all parties that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. You may go ahead.
All right. I'd like to just kind of go ahead and jump right into the agenda. We had talked in our last meeting about really getting to kind of the meat of the statement of work with regard to what was identified as the creation or development or determine whether to recommend to the Council a best practices approach. And there had been some discussion about, frankly, you know, notwithstanding the Council's use of that terminology in the statement of work, to instead proceed with a reference to guidelines, simply to avoid kind of two issues. And if Tim is on and I'm not capturing everything, he should feel free to jump in. But the idea was that by not using best practices, we avoid, A, the perception that a registry that does not adopt one of these mechanisms is out of compliance, so to speak, and also to avoid suggesting that what it is that we propose is exhaustive, simply because I think we all agree that there's probably somebody very creative somewhere that will come up with something that none of us have thought of. I am perfectly fine using guidelines, but then I've seen a lot of kind of back and forth about, you know, suggested guidelines, educational guidelines, and I would, you know, rather just go ahead with suggested guidelines, simply because I think if we go down the road of educational guidelines, then I think we put on ourselves a burden that, frankly, I don't think we have time to carry, namely going down the whole road of, you know, extensive discussion of what's come before and, you know, exhaustive detail of all the proof of concept reports and the Senate strategies report and so on and so forth. And while I certainly think that's an important part of our ultimate work, I don't want us to get, frankly, sidetracked by that. Is there anyone who would have any objection to our, just from this point forward, referring to them as suggested guidelines? And then in the report itself, there would be a footnote as to why we're referring to them that way.
Well, could I just comment on that?
Sure.
I wasn't on the call last week, so forgive me if I'm going over any ground here. But I have been following on the list what's been discussed. I mean, essentially, as I see it, this goes to the very core of this group's work, in the sense that if we say guidelines, no matter how we describe those guidelines, educational or otherwise, that's essentially a clear decision by the group not to recommend a best practice approach, which is the core of our work here. Determine, I think the statement of work said, you know, one of our tasks, number two, determine whether to recommend to the council a best practices approach to providing. So if we opt for guidelines, we are voting no to best practices approach. And I just think that should be squarely on the table and we should all be quite cognizant of that. I mean, I myself am not in favour of a guidelines approach. And we'll probably be put in a statement to that effect, but I will be in a minority, I imagine. But I just want to point out it goes to the very core of our work. So this is not merely semantic. It's not about describing documents. It goes to the very core of our key task here, that to vote against best practice approach.
All right, well, let's take a vote.
Well, hold on. Are we voting against best practices, or are we saying that we can't do something like that within the time frame granted?
Well, I think, Victoria, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're suggesting that if we are, in fact, going to say we're not going to call it best practices, we're going to call it guidelines, that we need to essentially make a formal decision that that's how we're going to go forward.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right.
But what's the basis for that decision? I mean, I believe in best practices, but I may not believe it's possible within this time frame. Am I missing something?
Can I just comment on that? The time constraint being our May 17th deadline, is that the time constraint?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What would be the constraint? I don't see, fundamentally, you know, to my mind, I mean, please correct me if I'm wrong, I see no time constraint in doing either task, and I see that not a huge amount of difference in the work involved in either task.
Okay.
So
okay.
I don't think it is a time constraint, but I'm, you know, that's just my opinion.
I personally, Victoria, I view it as a question of semantics, but I don't know if the proponent of on the call?
Did we take a roll call?
No, we Glenn's got the, I mean, we can go through and do that right now. I don't have, you know, the list of everybody who's on, but we can go ahead and do that right now. I know that I'm on.
Christina?
Yes?
Glenn, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, please.
I just have a call for you.
Excellent, thank you.
David Maher?
Yes.
Patrick Correa?
Yep.
Lance Griffin?
Yep.
Yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Mike Rodenbach?
Yes.
Patrick Jones from staff? John Bing?
Yes.
John Nevitt?
Here.
Victoria McEvedy? Margie Millim?
Yes.
And Jung Ju Ming?
Yes.
Yeah. My pronunciation.
All right. And I know that Peter had indicated he would not be able to join. I don't know whether he had sent you apologies or not, Glenn.
But he had sent a document.
Right, right.
This is John. Could I ask a procedural question?
Sure.
And I guess Glenn could probably answer this. Christina mentioned voting. How would the voting work in this kind of working group, question one? And question two, which constituencies are represented on this call? So I know registrars and registries are, and IPC and BC. Is there anyone from the other two?
Yeah, Victoria's on from non-commercial, correct?
Sure, and we have not got ISP.
Right.
Okay, so we're just missing ISPs.
Yes, we've got business, sorry. Yes, that's right.
Right,
got
two non-com. Right.
Did anyone from the ISPs ever join the working group at all?
No, unfortunately, despite repeated pestering.
Okay.
I guess there's still a question about voting, but before we got to voting, I would like to also understand the issue between semantic and not semantic, because I thought it was semantic, but now that someone says it's not semantic, I would like to understand why.
Well, I could address that in my opinion. I mean, guidelines, by the very nature of the word, to my mind, certainly from a legal point of view, indicate they're voluntary. A best practice approach, it's also voluntary, arguably, but it has a slightly higher standard. It suggests that, you know, a need to explain oneself for not adopting it, and it raises a presumption that it should be followed because there are good reasons to do so. So while arguably, you know, neither of them are mandatory or have binding force, I think there is a real difference in the two. And given that our statement of work, as I said earlier, asked whether to recommend a best practices approach, guidelines, just to my mind, is a vote for no. Is a no to best practice. Guidelines are not best practice. And people are talking about educational guidelines. Again, that's not a best practice recommendation. But that's to my mind.
Right.
Well, I mean, in my mind, Victoria, I'm right there with you. I mean, our statement of work is pretty clear. It mentions best practices, and it mentions that, you know, there's a BNI towards incorporating those as contractual guidelines. So I'm not sure why we've gotten so off course with that other discussion.
Patrick, can I impose on you, and I apologize for just calling on you out of the blue, to your knowledge, does best practices have any kind of consistent understanding within ICANN, and to the extent it does, is that understanding kind of, or that meaning consistent with how Victoria's, the meaning that Victoria's used?
Is this a question for me?
Yes.
Just off the cuff, I think it's pretty close to what Victoria is saying, is that there is something behind it as best practices.
Right.
But, you know, perhaps someone in the registry constituency can speak to that as well, to call them out.
All right.
Is this akin to, in contract language in the United States, you use best efforts as one standard and a little lower is commercially reasonable? Is that where you're going, Victoria?
Not really, but it's more a bit like the way I would analogize it is that, you know, best practice is like a self-regulatory code or something like that, a code of conduct that an industry agrees to be bound by, you know, and while it's not legally mandatory, you know, it's pretty much, you know, questions are asked and it's sort of a, you know, it's a cap on top of the law. It's strongly strongly suggested that people should follow it, you know, although it's not mandatory. guidelines make it, to my mind, entirely optional. You know, educational guidelines even more so, particularly given the sort of disclaimer language we've seen on the list of people saying, you know, what works for different business models and what have you. So you can expect guidelines to be even watered down even further. So I think that, you know, really, that is the analogy I would give. I don't know if that helps.
This is Patrick again. Just to add to it, I think of best practices as something sort of like what comes out of the IETF as a generally recognized standard that can be followed. And guidelines are something that you could choose to follow, but you may not be required to follow them.
Excuse me. I'm not familiar with the terminology used within ICANN, but obviously one could in an introduction state what one intends with the terms used in the document presented. People could disagree or agree, but at least it will be clear by what the terms used in the document, in what sense the terms were used in the document, what everyone agreed upon.
Right. Well, let's just, and John, I think you announced a question about voting, and in the statement of work, it identifies that voting is supposed to be done on a rough consensus approach. You know, we can do kind of a straw poll voting. Each constituency gets 3 votes, regardless of how many working group members there are, and each nominating committee counselor holds 1 vote, and unfortunately, UNJU liaisons such as yourself are non-voting. So do you think it would be helpful to everyone to just do a quick straw poll and see where we are on that? What might be the easiest thing to do, I think, is...
I think it's hard to vote at this point. I mean, many of us represent ourselves on the working group, but also represent and hold offices as constituency executive committee members, and it's important for us to be able to go back and poll our constituencies or solicit input from our constituencies. So I think it's hard to do a formal vote, and it would be difficult for us to do that, but a straw poll may make more sense from an individual perspective versus a constituency-by-constituency perspective.
I mean, I'm fine with that. I mean, frankly, I personally don't see how, you know, you'll be able to get input next week that you wouldn't have, you know, in the next day or so. But
I wouldn't.
Let's
no,
go ahead.
You're right, I wouldn't. But, you know, to take a formal vote from a constituency-by-constituency perspective, it's
sure. No, that's fine. Let's do it as a straw poll. You know, I personally am in agreement with Victoria's position, but given the amount of time that we have left, I would propose the following, namely that we take a straw poll and that, well, I guess, Victoria, let me ask you. I mean, did you have in mind that if we decided that we were intentionally going to not call whatever we're coming up with as guidelines, what did you see the next step as?
Well, I mean, my only view is that, I mean, I don't feel strongly that we need to have the vote right now. I mean, it goes, what I'm really saying is, to my mind, this goes to the very core of our work, right? Or, you know, but in a way, it's a decision we could make at the end. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Whether we put, you know, the work involved, I think, is essentially the same. And we may decide, you know, I think it's, to be honest, it's something we could probably leave to the very end of our work and then decide which way to put them forward. And, you know, in a way, it might actually be helpful for us. It might help us make the decision seeing the work done. Do you know, what I mean?
No, I completely agree with you.
So I am perfectly happy. All I wanted to do was put on the table in case we weren't all, you know, perhaps it just struck me, because I've been away from the group, but coming back to it, it just struck me that this whole issue was actually preemptive of where we were going.
Sure.
I'm quite happy to leave it to the very end of our work, and I think, to be honest, we might all benefit from that, because then we'd look back at our product and go, well, do we want to put this forward as one or another,
right,
you know?
Right.
So I'm open-minded.
Okay. Does anyone disagree with that suggestion?
I think it's a great suggestion.
All right. The next thing, so I will make a note of that we're going to go ahead and move forward and decide formally as to what we're going to call our output once we have an output. The second thing that I had on the agenda, and again, I'm just trying to make sure that we kind of cover our bases here. These things are not essentially in any kind of particular order. Was to talk a little bit about the framework that Liz had circulated last week, based on our, based on the conversation that we had had in terms of kind of setting out the principles and the recommendations, and cross-referencing everything against the GTLD report. Did anyone have any feelings one way or the other about adopting that model?
Well, I do.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Okay. I mean, and again, please correct me if I'm getting the wrong end of the stick here, but okay, looking at the guidelines, first of all, on the very first page, that last paragraph, when it says sort of, in addition, working group members recognize the registry and registrar business models may be different, that again, that relates back to the issue we've just been discussing. So, but in terms of us setting out the principles that GAC and the council or the committee or whatever it is have got to so far, almost without really looking at it, getting us all to go, oh, there's a consensus on the group that we totally agree with everything that they've done or said or what have you. And I mean, I just don't know if that's, I'm not sure. Or if it was going to be done, I would have probably wanted it to be, well, preferred it to be very, very footnoted. And I think perhaps the mission, the combination of mission plus core values is confusing. But that's just, but I'm just wondering, what are we doing here? I mean, affirming that we agree with GAC and the staff work so far? I mean, that could be done in a paragraph. I mean, do we need to set them all out? Or, I mean, where are we going with this? I'm not sure.
It was my understanding, and I think, Mike, I had a better understanding of it during last week's call, but my understanding was that Liz had proposed it not only to give us, and I guess I should say as an initial matter, that the text on background was really text that she just kind of put together as kind of a placeholder. It wasn't necessarily something we'd all sign off on.
Yep, yep.
But the idea was basically to give us not only a structural framework within which to consider our guidelines, but to also, or whatever it is our output is, but to also ensure that to the extent that it was possible to do so, that they correlated with, for example, the principles that the new GTLD committee has agreed on thus far and the GAC and so on, to just kind of draw the correlation across. And Mike, if you could jump in here, because this is where I got kind of hazy on it personally.
I think it wasn't just the GAC, but just making sure in the principles of the new GTLD report we had a good statement of this principle, which is essentially, to minimize against any need for defensive registration. I guess, no, the better way to put it is to minimize the likelihood of abusive registrations. Some sort of text like that in general principles, and then we devise a policy around that in accord with our statement of work.
Well, in that case, I would have thought we could have been much more focused, perhaps, about pulling out the ones that are really relevant to our work. And I just didn't.
Well, that's the problem. There's none in there now that are particularly relevant to our work, so we need to draft them
right.
And propose them to Liz. But I don't think it needs to be very complicated. I mean, if you look at those principles, they're basically simple sentences.
Right. Right. And in fact, Victoria, I don't know if you've got access to the electronic copy, but apparently, as I understand it, what Liz had done was to really just kind of put everything in there and then highlight the most the portions that she thought were relevant to our work.
The green stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. So arguably, if the black stuff could come out and the green, we might be there for the green to work with.
Correct.
Okay, fine. I think that could do with a bit of work from us, to be honest, if we're going to do that. Otherwise, we should just maybe have a paragraph saying, look, these are what we're working, this is our base, this is what we're looking at, and then draw out the particular, restate our statement of work. And I mean, I just don't know that it's anyway.
No, I mean, that's exactly what I want to find out, what everybody feels. I mean, it may be that we decide that an even shorter way to do it is to say that, in considering our statement of work and in compiling our, whatever it is that it is we're going to call them, you know, we viewed the following principles, you know, D, E, and F to be key. And keeping in mind that this is going to be an appendix to the final report, so it's not going to be difficult for somebody to refer back. So we physically don't even have to have them in.
Mm-hmm.
If people think that it would just be clear to read, I can understand why it's helpful to have them anchored and clearly in context, again, kind of assuming that we agree on which ones are relevant. But on the other hand, you get to a certain point, you know, at least I do, and you go through these things, and you're like, okay, where does the text start already? And it would be a shame if people got kind of too focused on those, because that's not what we're doing. So it sounds as if we have two suggestions. One would be to kind of leave this as it is, but make sure that there are additional, I don't know if you want to call them principles, recommendations, guidelines.
Leave what
word.
As it is. What are you talking about exactly?
What?
Leave what exactly as it is? What are you
leave this draft document that Liz has circulated as it is.
The approach to guidelines. Okay.
Right. So one option is to just leave it as it is, and make sure that to the extent that we've identified any holes in terms of kind of drawing a connection between what's in here and what our purpose is. Another option would be to just delete the things that we don't think are relevant. And a third option, and correct me if there might be a fourth, but a third one would clearly be to just distill it down into kind of a very summary paragraph that would identify which guidelines, principles, recommendations, et cetera, we took into account in making our proposal.
Yeah, because, you know, like on page 4 of 8, you know, she actually arguably only the two boxes, actually only box 3 is arguably really relevant to our work.
Box 3? I don't think that's just talking about TLDs. I think really box 12 and box 17 are the ones that apply to us right now. And we need something more specific.
Right. All right. Well, can I suggest this? Because I would love for us to get down into kind of some discussion about some of the substantive things that have been put forth. Could I ask that everyone basically think about this for the next couple days and start putting forth on their list what the view is? And to the extent you've got something envisioned that physically looks different, to just kind of put together a very, you know, basic draft of that. Would that be acceptable to everyone?
Basically, you want to take comments on this document and
right,
get it.
Right, right, but do it on the list as opposed to now. All right. So it doesn't sound as if anybody has any objections to that. All right. One of the things that I would like to do is talk in more detail about kind of the substance of whatever recommendations you may make. And again, I'll just shy away from calling them guidelines or best practices. And I realize that there are already some proposals that are out there. The most recent being Peter's, but also before that, some, I guess, proposals that Tim and John had put forth. Is there anybody, before we move into discussing these, is there anyone who's kind of at the point where they have a additional proposal that they'd like to put forth so that we could discuss it now?
Okay. Sorry, Christina. What are you asking exactly?
I'm saying that before we start getting into, for example, discussing kind of the gist of, you know, the substance of John's April 18 email and Tim's response, talking about, you know, how there shouldn't be any requirement, et cetera, are there any additional proposals that people would like to discuss during the call?
So I guess you're asking... I mean, I read John's email as saying he wants them to be educational guidelines, correct? So you want to debate whether they should be that or best practices? I thought we were going to move past that.
No. I guess really what I'm talking about, I guess, is maybe the starting point of maybe the better way to start it would be Tim's statement, for example, that he doesn't think that registries should be required to implement a rights protection mechanism and that it should be left up to them based on their model, intended use, and discussions.
I think that does go actually back to the guidelines.
Exactly.
I really do. Yeah.
I think what we should focus on, Christina, is the actual substance of what the guidelines or best practices or contractual conditions, whatever they end up to be, let's talk about the substance
right,
of them.
Right, and perhaps I'm not being clear, but, for example, when I look at what Tim is saying, I read what he's saying to basically mean there should be no baseline requirement that there be some kind of rights protection mechanism and that it all has to be variable depending upon, you know, whether what the registry is going to do, who the community is, so on and so forth. And it seems to me, for example, and just to kind of give you an example that I've talked about with some of you, I can agree with that under a very narrow set of circumstances. For example, and again, this is kind of depending upon how you want to call it, and this, again, could be one of the practices, just to kind of give you a sense of where I'm coming from. I would be willing to agree, and again, just kind of speaking personally, that if you have a registry that has a very narrowly defined community that has an easily identifiable and verifiable number of members, all of whose connection to the community can be documented and verified, that is a situation in which an additional rights protection mechanism, such as a sunrise process or an IP claims process, is not as necessary. And I'll just take dot travel, for example, because that's the TLD I summarized. When you have, for example, in my view, when you have a TLD that is that tightly defined, you have to be a member of one of these 18 communities, you have to submit documentation, the names that you're entitled to have to have a direct verifiable correlation to the names you use to do business, when you define it that way, when you create that kind of initial framework, you don't really need a sunrise. I mean, and that is another way to look at it, is that is one type of rights protection mechanism. So that's where I was trying to go with this, is that, you know, maybe we should start out by talking about that. But I'm, you know, I'm certainly open to delving right into Peter's proposal.
Can I just make a suggestion?
Sure.
I'm just wondering, you know, if we ought not start with sort of basically a list, you know, because we've already worked out from our earlier compilation of all the different registries, you know, and what they're doing, we've already worked out what's existing practice, haven't we? And now we've got Peter's ideas about some quite novel ideas, which look actually brilliant, some of them. You know, I mean, are we now not in the process of like listing everything and then like almost like looking at the pros and cons beside it and then deciding whether it should go forward as a best practice or an implementation or guideline or whatever?
Absolutely.
And I wonder if we should just throw them all on a list and then like ask everybody to think again, you know, for a few days about anything else to throw into the list, and then we, you know, probably go through the process of, I mean, obviously the questionnaire process is going to turn up new ideas that we haven't thought of as well, which would be great, but.
I mean, certainly, I wasn't, you know, I think the way you propose it is far more structured and organized and streamlined than what I had in mind. But we can certainly do that, and I'm, you know, kind of willing to act as scribe for purposes of, you know, sending around a post-meeting email. So to that end, you know, one rights protection mechanism would be something akin to, and unfortunately I'm not as familiar with the other sponsored TLDs, so those of you who are and are on the phone, please jump in, but using .travel as a baseline, for example, or as an example. You know, it's a tightly defined community of eligible registrants whose connection to the community can be documented and was required to be documented. And within the community itself, those eligible members were, eligibility was restricted even further by requiring a nexus between the .travel domain name a community member desired and what they were eligible for.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think, there's probably actually, in terms of methodology, there's probably only about 7 or 8 that we know of, right? You know, like eligibility being one. And then we're going to have, like, variations of sophistication,
right?
And we should, like, put them all in, like, column 2, you know? And, I think the answers will come out of just, like, having the stuff to look at visually in one place. You know, to be honest, because obviously some of them won't be appropriate. I mean, and this is what I'm saying, like leaving our vote till the end is a good idea because, you know, some of them will so clearly not be appropriate for general use, right?
Right.
And we may be able to see themes where we, you know, decide that things are appropriate for general use.
Just so that I'm following you, because I think I'm following, we should draw out, what you're suggesting is we should draw out from the summary. 6 or 7 key characteristics, and then map those across the various TLDs.
Well, I mean, I'm really just saying we should draw. You know, we know from those compilations. I am saying exactly that, actually.
Okay.
You know, we only know about 5. There's only 5 in use, right? Eligibility being one, and then there's like, okay, it's used in different ways, but you know, that's one rights protection mechanism. You know. But here's the 3 main variations, right? What have you? There's very few, right? So we should just like list them all and then start, and then look at the variations and decide which may be of general application and which clearly aren't. And you know, then and Peter's come up with some quite novel ideas, which I certainly haven't heard of before.
Is somebody trying to talk?
I agree with Victoria. It's a really good approach. Just kind of list what the different options are everywhere from registered verification up to UDRP, and not only what we've gotten looked at so far, but you know these ideas of Peter's and my idea and you know other ideas, and start talking about those for the next few weeks.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and just to the extent that we can, you know, run through that broad list of what we would identify as the basic models. And then I can put something together and post it, and people can just kind of fill it in. Does that sound like a good way to go about it?
Well, I think we'd need to have you a look at your, you've done a big compilation document, haven't you, of all of them so far?
I haven't updated it since Lisbon, but I can do that.
Okay, I would need to have a look at that myself to be able to come up with some, because that's where we've got it, isn't it?
I have it here. I mean, it's IP claim. So we could create the list from this document very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Christina, I'll go ahead and do that. Did you ever, by the way, get this TLD summary document in anything other than a PDF?
No, because every time I go to my word processing department and I ask them to put it into one document, they look at me and steam comes out of their ears. So if anybody wants to volunteer to do that, be my guest. So no is the short answer to that.
Okay. Okay. At some point, I need to get it in Word. Maybe you can just send me all the Word files. Or do you think they've all been posted to the list, right?
They should be, yeah. Everything.
Except,
everybody should.
Of course, .jobs.
Well, and .biz and .arrow. And .arrow is my fault. And I need to just wrap that little section up and move on. All right. Well, I hate to, you know, given that we really only have, I think, probably 2 more calls, 3 more calls, you know, I think Victoria has got a great idea about the easiest way to go forward. I'm just reluctant to say, okay, well, we're done for the day, and you know, to try and use this time. One thing that we could do is if people have got kind of initial reactions. I realize Peter isn't on the call, and you know, he certainly can answer questions about his proposal better than anyone else. Although. I know that Lance and I have talked with him about aspects of it. Does anybody want to just kind of start commenting on Peter's proposal? Is there anything in particular that there's one other kind of administrative thing that needs to be done, but I was kind of hoping to just kind of put that at the end, unless that's where we are right now.
I just saw this, John. I just saw Peter's email, so I haven't been able to look through it, but I thought Victoria's suggestion was listing them before we start commenting pros and cons, and then that way we could see what's on the spectrum, make sure we understand the proposals, and then comment on them at a subsequent meeting.
Well, I mean, right, but part of what I was hoping to do is that to the extent that people had looked at proposal and had questions about it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
That I could just go ahead and convey those to him so that he can post the answers so that we're not kind of behind.
So you're looking for questions, not comments.
Yeah.
Well, okay, how about this? For registrant verification, I mean, that's a topic we've talked about a lot in the new TLD task force, but I don't know that it's really gone anywhere. I'm wondering, John, what you think about kind of looking at these things as they're either or. They're going to be restricted to some verified registrant community, or they're going to be unrestricted like we have with .com and .net now. Is that pretty much the way you're looking at things, or do you see there being middle ground between those? Because I think I do.
Could you clarify exactly what you're asking?
I mean, some sort of registrant verification model in new TLDs. Basically, I'm asking you whether you're looking at these things like there could be a set of criteria for open, unrestricted TLDs, and then a different set of guidelines or whatever you want to call them for restricted TLDs, .travel that we have today.
The sponsored ones?
Yeah.
I don't have an opinion, and I'm open to hearing the pros and cons of each of the proposals, and if it makes sense for one type versus another or all types, that would sit well with me. I think, you know, there's the underlying issue of whether these should be voluntary or best practices, and I guess we'll just deal with that once we get the different ideas on the table. And to the extent they're more on the guideline side, first best practices is probably more flexibility. I would think on the part of the registry, certainly.
Okay.
Patrick, I hate to put you on the spot again, but one of the questions that I have in looking at Peter's proposal is, and I realize that you know this. It may be that this is a question that I need to direct to the general counsel's office. But are you aware, I mean, I'm just wondering whether, for example, Peter suggested that there be kind of a centralized administrator, and Peter gives, you know, ICANN or WIPO as the example. Has there ever been a discussion about having ICANN take on that role before? And if so, what happened? You know?
To my knowledge, I don't think that's ever been brought up. I mean, maybe some of the others who've been around for a while might have knowledge of that. But, you know, I know there back in, geez, it must have been 99, when the Network Solutions was the registry and the registrar, there was an attempt to have a, I don't want to call it a banned list, but it was sort of a list if someone applied for a domain name and it had a trademark that it would raise a flag and automatically block it from registration. And at some point, that turned into an unworkable thing to maintain, as so many new domain names were registered at the time. And, you know, if that's one of Peter's suggestions, I think pretty quickly some of the registries are going to say that that's not something that works.
But what about somewhere, for example, where there was a centralized database of the claimed rights details, for lack of a better way to describe it, which I think is part of what he's talking about here. You know, and so you would have a situation where you would not only have kind of a centralized database, but you'd also have kind of a role somewhat similar perhaps to what PwC did in connection with .eu.
But aren't there going to be problems where some parties may claim a right in a word or name, and others have completely, like, perfectly legitimate rights to use that same word or name in a different context?
So this is David. Could you put me in the queue to talk about this?
Sure, absolutely. To answer your question, Peter, I mean, Patrick, yes, although I had understood from going through Peter's proposal, or at least, you know, one part of it, and now I can't find it, I guess towards the end where he's talking about resolving conflicts. don't know if that answers your question or not.
No, I don't have it open in front of me.
Oh, okay.
You know, I guess it's something to consider if this is one of the things that's being discussed, is how do you reconcile multiple parties having equal right to use a register
right.
and names that might show up on the list.
Can I just sort of say to that, I mean, from a trademark point of view, that's why it's all first come, first served, isn't it? Because it's like that's the difference with trademark law, isn't it? It's not territorial, and that's why they're all subject to entrenched rights, you know.
Well, it's not all first come, first serve anymore.
Well, that's right. No, absolutely. But, subject to,
right.
you know, prior rights or earlier rights or better rights, right? But could I just also, while I'm speaking, that example that someone gave about the old network solutions approach, I'm just thinking, you know, there must be sort of a wealth of knowledge that the old hands have about, like, things that were tried and, you know, like lapsed practices or things that have already been attempted or things that didn't work, and I'm just wondering if there's any way we can tap that sort of knowledge, because that was such a good example.
Yeah, the thing is that was tried in 2000, you know, and now things have really changed
mm-hmm.
a lot since they kind of discarded other ideas and resolved in favor of the UDRP. Now we've been dealing with that for the last 6 years. And
this is David.
Sorry
to interrupt again.
Yeah, no, go right.
I think I could act as your historical authority, since I wrote, along with two other people, the first three drafts of the UDRP. At the time, we were struggling with the old network solutions approach, which said if you had a trademark of any kind, you could throw out a domain registration. That had proven to be totally unworkable. Even Network Solutions wasn't defending it very strongly. So the UDRP was developed with a concept of good faith to be the test of whether someone was cyber squatting or not. But we also, I remember talking to all of the IETF people who said, well, you know, let's put trademark law on a logical basis. Let's develop an international database of trademarks. And the three trademark lawyers who were working together, myself, Sally Abel, Albert Trampa, said, that's just impossible. For one thing, trademarks come and go. There's a time dimension. A trademark can be abandoned or a trademark can be created. There's no way to create a database that has any meaning whatsoever to encompass all of the rights that people have territorially, in a time dimension, in a product dimension or service dimension or anything else. The database would be larger than all the hydrogen atoms in the universe, or close anyway. I think you're barking up the wrong tree to even talk about this possibility.
But this is John. It may come in a slightly milder version, like registering those who have claimed trademarks in one round or at one time and keeping them for the next time and adding on to it all the time. That would be a pragmatic approach and might even also help some, though not solve a problem.
Right. Well, and another way to go about it is to structure it, for example. One way that I think, you know, possibly you could deal with the abandonment, the lapsing issue that David points out, is it would be incumbent on each participating trademark owner to annually verify that the information that they had provided was accurate, complete, and current. And I realize that doesn't take into account, you know, marks that are abandoned in between that 1 year phase, but you know, again, that's you know.
And what happens with all of the people who've registered gold medal and United and all the other names that are used by, in some cases, hundreds
right.
of different users? These are all of the issues that were discussed extensively when the UDRP was created.
yeah, it just strikes me, listening to your comments, David, this is exactly the kind of really value-based, sort of really in-depth, kind of thoughtful exercise that we need to be engaging with. You know, this is absolutely right. I mean, obviously that's going to be part of our work in the next stage when we look at the list. And, you know, hopefully you're going to be, as you say, a historical resource and go, well, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, we can't, I mean, my only concern is, the only reason I'm just now making this point is, you know, we've got to be very careful to come up with, you know, we don't want to be coming up with, you know, serious policy recommendations on the fly, you know, and I think that, you know, all of us need to take, perhaps we need to step back, decide what we're really going to look at in depth, and then look at it in depth, you know. You know, once we've done the list and once we've worked out what are even possible best practices of genuine application, then we're going to need to have a very close and thoughtful look at them.
Right, absolutely. And it may be that what we end up doing is really kind of almost a negative best practices list, in the sense of, you know, these are all the things that have been tried, and regardless of what sector you talk to, whether it's the registrar, the registry, the trademark owner, someone providing, you know, this particular practice did not work.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be what we come up with.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's where I'm at. I think none of the processes have really worked, because none of them deal with the two fundamental problems that you can't ever guess what the infringers are going to register. There's always plenty more combinations that they will be able to register that you did not think to defensively register, even if you had the rights.
Mm-hmm.
More fundamentally, any of those domain names potentially could be used for some fair use. I can make an argument about any domain name you can name that potentially could be used for fair use, even if it has a trademark in it. And until the site is actually used, it's not infringing, in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, I'm willing to give up on Sunrise, just let registries do whatever they want to do for Sunrise periods, so long as we get some sort of quick, effective UDRP, because the one we have does not work. It does not. It is not a deterrent to cyber squatting as it was intended to be.
David, is there a historical document or even some kind of law review article or something would have all of this stuff documented so that we could say, there is?
Yes, there is. I wrote it.
Yes. Excellent. Can you send it around?
I shall.
Oh, that would be fabulous. Because I think to be able to kind of draw on this, and it may be that circumstances have changed enough, or there has been a new development that it perhaps tacked on to something that was tried and rejected before, you know, considered and rejected, that it might work this time. But to even just have that as kind of a baseline checklist would be fantastic. All right. Does it make sense, and I don't want to keep us very long, does it make sense to maybe take a step back and see if we can, see if we want to or feel that we need to kind of identify the overall principles that any such mechanism must satisfy?
No, I don't think so. That's only my view. I think that only once we've got the information in front of us, and I think the exercise will work best backwards, and then maybe we can test it against that. But I don't think, I mean, I certainly couldn't. Well, I couldn't. Maybe someone else could come up with one. I think it's premature.
Well, I'm talking very kind of 30,000 foot. Like, it must be fair, or it must, you know, we don't.
I hear what you're saying, but I think, you know, we all know the values that are inherent in the ICANN system. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I think, I don't know if we're going to need to formalize that.
Okay.
But this is just my thoughts. Other people may think differently.
Hey, Christina, can I add something?
Sure.
I guess from an operational and implementation side of things, John Nevitt's email from a couple days ago was really helpful to sort of that approach of taking it from maybe not so much best practices that are mandated upon the registries, but some kind of guidelines that would be useful in protecting the rights of others. That's a really workable way to proceed, and that would be my suggestion as someone who's not been on your calls and coming into this, hopefully not just for today, but just to give you some guys some background, that would be a good thing to follow.
Which email are you talking about? I want to make sure I'm right.
I'm talking about John's email to the list from Wednesday, April 18th.
Do you mind if I interrupt, John? Were you on the beginning of this call? Just because we had that, you know, that goes to the very substance of that first issue of, like, whether we recommend at the end of our work to do best practices or guidelines, yeah, and the difference between the two of those, because to me, you're raising the same issue, which is fine. I'm just pointing that out.
I don't really want to go back and, you know, have the same argument that was raised at the beginning of the call, but I just wanted to say, from an operational and implementation side of things, that if you're looking to help the new GTLD effort, John's approach is really good.
Meaning that, I guess I'm trying to distill out what you're characterizing as the approach versus the guideline issue.
You're saying that you will vote for guidelines when we eventually have the vote.
I don't have a vote. I'm just staff.
Oh, okay.
No, but Patrick, I want to make sure that I understand, because I actually don't think that I do. Can you be a little bit clearer as to what, I mean, are you in fact talking about kind of the whole guideline versus best practices issue, or are you talking about kind of drilling down even further and saying, okay, if you're going to have, and this is a little bit of what we talked about last week, that, you know, if, for example, you as a registry want to adopt a model that kind of loosely falls within, quote, unquote, the sunrise mechanism, you need to do A, B, C, and D. Are you talking about that latter scenario?
Well, my suggestion is, instead of trying to come up with things that are mandated upon a registry to follow as part of their startup process, that there be some kind of, I guess, the guidelines is a better way to go rather than a mandated best practices approach. And I know that's in the statement of work, is to come up with some best practices. But in looking at this from an implementation side of things, it may be easier to provide options and guidelines and go take that approach rather than something that's mandated upon a business.
Oscar, this is Aubrey. Can I say something?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I may be totally confused, but I think that what we're trying to say is in either case the same, and whether at the end of it we said it was a guideline or we said it was a best practice was the thing that we had postponed to the future, but that we were leaving that neutral. And I think that you know, that doesn't obviate what was just said, that we can just basically keep on going. Whether we say it's a best practice or whether we say it's a recommendation at this point is moot. I mean, we use whichever word we're most comfortable with while we're talking, and the nature of these things is what's going to be determined at the end. So that's
fine.
Right.
Victoria, I have a question for you, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but you know, one of the things that I've been struggling with is I really don't think that there is a one-size kind of fits-all model. I've really been trying to come up with a model that works in every scenario. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is, you know, if there is agreement among the working group that is in fact the case, at least among the members of the working group, that maybe there is value in saying, okay, we're not necessarily going to say that there is one single best practice. You know, here are the three different models or four different models or five different models that have been used. And if you are going to pursue model A, it is a best practice within that model to include this component, that component, and this component, and then kind of go through the various models. Is that, I mean, what's your reaction to that? I'm just trying to kind of get a gauge.
Well, I think that's very sensible. I mean, I think that will be, I think this is why I think we should leave it to the end, because I think that it'll become clear that only that kind of approach will even be remotely feasible, right? And that's why I think, you know, like, basically once we've done the work, the answer will, it'll answer itself, I guess.
This is John. If I can make one comment on where we're going. I think there's a distinction between mandatory and not mandatory. And if we make that distinction now, once we get through the process, then we could decide if it's, especially if it's non-mandatory, then you could decide where it falls on the spectrum between best practices, guidelines, educational.
Well, nothing's mandatory. I mean, a best practice approach.
Okay.
Is that
well, no, I, and I understand that. But if we could get agreement that it wouldn't be mandated on the registry.
Nothing's going to be mandated.
Okay.
Even the highest, you know, we're looking at the difference between guidelines.
Victoria, just let me finish. If it's not mandatory in that it's not a part of the contract, in which case it would be required, and my
feeling
is...
It's not on the table. That's not even on the table.
Okay.
If our statement of work talks about whether or not we're going to recommend a best practices approach. So mandated nothing is on the table. It's not even on the table.
I mean, it may morph itself into part of the RFP, but I don't know but that's beyond what we would do. I mean, the council may say, this is a really good idea. Let's put this in, you know, this is going to have to be part of the RFP that goes out to all new DTLD applicants. But again, I agree that's kind of beyond what we're in a position to do.
So now if I could finish, if it's not mandatory, which sounds like everyone's in agreement that it's not, and in fact may not even be part of the statement of work, and which makes it even easier, then I agree that we should follow through with the process that we're undergoing. But, and like I've said in the note, is we delink it from the new TLD report, and maybe and Christina's position is, and I don't necessarily disagree, that it's not for this body to decide that, but it could be this body recommending it to the higher body, be it the GNSO or the actual task force. Then essentially we could really roll up our sleeves, put out these ideas, list them, comment on them, pros and cons, and then at the end decide whether we want to recommend them as best practices, recommend them as guidelines, educational materials, whatever we want to call it at that point. But I think the being under the gun that we have to do this by May 17th, I don't think is workable. And the only reason why we have that gun at our heads is because there's a perceived notion that this final report needs to be in the new TLD task force report. And I think that's been the problem from the process standpoint for a while. And again, I don't think it's this body that needs to decide that, but it could be a recommendation from this body to the other body.
I think that's a really good point. I think I have to say that although I'm new to the whole process, I think that's often a problem. I mean, we should try and do quality work, full stop. So, you know, I mean, a time constraint arguably must be negotiable on some level.
No.
I mean, our focus should be trying to deliver the best possible product that is of most use to the committee, council, or whatever.
I mean, I agree, and you know, John and I have talked about this offline. You know, the problem we have here is that the GNSO council, in deciding to create the working group and in approving its statement of work, made it abundantly clear that it is their intention that this be considered as part of the new GTLD process, which is why they want it in the report. And while I certainly would don't want to say that we can't identify other areas of work, for example, you know, for those of you familiar with the Reserve Names Working Group, it's my understanding that they did submit their final report, but in doing so, they identified additional areas that they thought would require additional time. And on the basis of that, they got an additional 30-day extension. And I would much prefer, and frankly I think it's incumbent on us, given our mandate, to go that route. In other words, we provide the best report that we can, and as a practical matter, I'm not all that sure that we're not going to be able to do it in you know, between now and the 17th, and that we identify what additional areas that we thought really could benefit from, for example, from another 30 days. But I don't think it's realistic or possible for us to submit a report or that basically is a letter saying, you know, we know what you asked us for, but we disagree that it should be part of the new GTLD report, A, because it's not mandatory, and B, because we just need more time, so you'll get it when you get it. And I don't mean to trivialize what you're suggesting, John, but that's how that type of request will be perceived. You know, and if the council were meeting before our deadline, I would have absolutely no qualms about suggesting that we get an extension. But, you know, the bottom line is they're not, and there's nothing that I can do about that.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting topic, quite frankly, because I think these artificial deadlines must be responsible for an awful lot of very bad policy, quite frankly. But I agree with what you say, Christina, right? There's a way to negotiate it, obviously, and that sounds sensible to me.
So I would just encourage, you know, everybody to kind of, I think we've all been thinking about these issues for a long time, which is why we've been involved in this working group in the first place. And I would just encourage everybody to really start, you know, using the list. And Mike, if you can get kind of that chart out, you know, that in the next, you know, definitely before the weekend and preferably in the next day or so, that would be great. Because I do think that there's a way that we can, you know, take advantage of the list and take advantage of our remaining calls. And I am coming personally to the view that, you know, what I expected to be a really, really long report is probably not going to be, which I think is going to save us all some time in the back end. I need to go. You all are welcome to continue if you would like. I had taken a quick poll on last week's call as to who was going to be at the INTA meeting. And Victoria, I don't think you were on that call. Are you going to be there?
I'm sorry.
The INTA meeting in Chicago next week?
No.
Okay. All right. Avery?
Yeah?
You're not going to be in Chicago next week, are you?
No, not at all.
Okay. Professor Bing?
I'd be on the call next week, yes.
No, will you be in Chicago next week? There's okay.
No.
And Unju, will you be there?
I will not be there, but my colleague Eric Goldberg will be.
Oh, excellent. I'll email with you separately. And I think, is there anybody else who is on this call that was not on last week's call that I haven't asked this question of? All right. Because I was just thinking that, you know, it would be nice if we all kind of met socially as opposed to the phone. I'm going to jump off. Mike, if the group wants to continue, if you wouldn't mind taking over as chair, that would be great.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Pretty much over time. So.
Yeah.
Anybody else has anything else they want to discuss, I think we should end the call.
I agree.
I think that's fine.
Awesome job chairing, Mike. Thanks.
Mike,
aim to please.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, all.